I read it from a reputable green team site. This is from the CelticsBlog.com, right, Murray?
Correct.
Okay. Bobby Manning wrote this the other day, and it was just a survey of the players that came out of the third lottery position. Not the third pick, but the teams that started with the third lottery position and what happened. He said,
This is Cousin Anthony. Welcome to the Bobcast.
I'm going to bomb this shit.
So that's where I got it from, Dave, just by the way.
Alrighty, back from a little mini vacation, Washington, D.C., feeling refreshed, feeling a little rejuvenated after that last rusty Bobcast. This is the Bobcast, a weekly tour of sports and pop culture, as always brought to you by CLNS Media. I'm Bobby Manning. We're ready to go again today with another wonderful story of aspiration becoming accomplishment. So much to get into today. We have a power-packed episode, but first, CLNS Media, a lot of cool things happening over there. There's going to be a new website coming very soon. New content coming all the time over on the podcast end over there. I mean, there's so many shows, I don't even know how to name them all anymore. So CLNS Media is your spot to find all the great podcasts the network has to offer, from Celtics Beat to the rest, all the way down the line. Coverage across the NBA and now the sports world. So it's just a lot of good stuff coming over there. You want to check that out here on the Bobcast this week. And of course, you can follow me at Real Bob Manning. And we're going to show Dan Greenberg some love today. Go get into his story of going from aspiration to accomplishment. And he is with us now. Dan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. How's it going?
Oh, it's great to have you here. It's pretty bad weather now as I get back from D.C., so hopefully that's going to turn around a little bit. But let's get going right away here. It was an intense playoff run this year, one of the better ones probably since 08, 2010, those 2 years. I'd probably put this third behind those. And I think the highlight of all of that was being at game one and really just seeing Dave Portnoy and his entourage down courtside giving LeBron crap. And it came my way today. Probably one of the more tired Celtics takes out there on the internet. And that's that notion that if Rajon Rondo, of all people, didn't go down, the Bulls would have beat the Celtics. How would you rank that take on a scale of 1 to 10 on the hot meter?
Well, it's certainly a hot take, so I'd give it like a 7 or 8, but that doesn't mean that it's entirely accurate. I mean, everyone, there's no denying he obviously had a big impact in the game, you know, in that game 2 that they won. I mean, he was everywhere. It was very vintage Rondo, but, you know, in game one, he didn't play the entire fourth quarter. He didn't really have as much of an impact. So do I think they would have, you know, won 4 straight? No. But do I still think the Celtics would have won that series? I think, you know, how they played in that Washington series and even being able to steal one in Cleveland, you know, should put that to rest that, you know what, they were actually better than the Bulls. They didn't lose to them at all during the regular season. So, you know, it's fun to talk about, but I say pump the brakes a little bit because, you know, it is Rajon Rondo. It's not like it's Jordan.
It's Rondo. Yeah, certainly. And it definitely brought Celtics fans back in general, I feel like, having that big postseason run finally. It felt like a lot of people were attached to Paul Pierce, that era, and all the winning back then, and this was finally the team that brought the winning back. Wasn't the hardest path to get there, but they certainly bought themselves that path by getting that one seed, and even though it didn't play out versus Cleveland, I think they certainly weren't in the regular season they had.
You know, I think a lot of us green teamers, or whatever you want to call us, had this team right from the start. We you know, were right in the impact that Horford was going to make. You know, it was always so funny to hear, you know, on Twitter, oh, Horford's not even getting 20 and 10. Like, all of a sudden, he's going to be a Dwight Howard production type player. That just made me so mad because, you know, you could see what he did for Isaiah. You could see what he did for the offense and for the team. So it was a bad year to be a troll of the Celtics, I think. But, you know, that's how I like it.
If we're going to go back to that Paul Pierce team, a lot of talk about his return, the impending jersey retirement, but the whole Ray Allen situation, I want to talk to you about that. Will Ray Allen ever be loved by the Celtics? It feels like we're nowhere close right now. We had all the controversy this year over him and Rondo, the reunion, this and that. It just feels like even all these years after 2012, there's still no love for Rondo. I'm not Rondo. Well, there's certainly a little love for Rondo either, but certainly not a lot of love for Ray Allen now.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't see myself, you know, giving him love anytime soon. You know, I have a personal approach where, you know, I'm going to do what KG does. And it doesn't appear that KG's over it. So if he's still going to hold the grudge, you know, he had that show on TNT where it was everybody but Ray and they talked about it there. And, you know, it was really kind of messed up what he did and how he did it. So, you know, as long as KG's going to hold the grudge, you know, I followed him into battle once before. I'll follow his lead one more time.
He set the stage for the Kevin Durant decision, I think, joining the losing team after the conference finals. So we have him to thank for that, too, in a way.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
So we're going to move on to your bio, I guess your claim to fame, one of your favorite moments of your life, and that's the Walter McCarty knockout game you played. I kind of want you to give a little verbal history of that, especially for a guy like me, a youngster.
He was on the team, I think, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, when, you know, they weren't really, really competitive. You know, they made that Eastern Conference Finals in 02, but other than that, you know, all we had really was Walter McCarty, and Tommy absolutely loves him. I mean, there was any time, it was kind of like when Scalabrine would come in, but way better because McCarty could actually play. You know, he could hit down that three. He actually got minutes, you know, when the games mattered. And I don't know how old I was, but I was in like eighth grade, or I was like a freshman or something like that. So don't ask me how long ago that was, because I'm old as shit, but it was a long-ass time ago. And Red Auerbach used to have a basketball camp at Brandeis University. So, you know, being the kid who still thought he had basketball aspirations, I obviously went to that camp, and it was crazy because there were so many different levels of talent there that I quickly learned that, you know, maybe I need to, you know, come back down to reality. But at the end, I think it was like a 2-week session or a 3-week session, something like that. At the end of the session, they had like a guest speaker come and sort of, you know, talk to the kids and do whatever. And that guy was Walter McCarty. So instantly I was pumped because, you know, at the time it was one of my favorite Celtics. He's just this outrageously tall, lanky guy who can just nail it from 40 feet with ease. And we had a whole camp-wide game of knockout. And, you know, I made it to the finals against him. I was so freaking nervous. Like, this is an NBA player. I'm pretty sure I, like, airballed my first shot attempt. You know, he missed it. I made the layup. We went back and forth maybe one or two times. He eventually knocked me out. By far the best athletic achievement of my life, I would say. And just this past year when I went to Phoenix to go see the Celtics play, and, you know, I had all these passes and went up to him and I told him that story. I was like, you know, you're not going to remember this, but, like, you know, 15 years ago, whatever it was, you and I played in a final round of knockout at the Red Auerbach camp. And he starts laughing, like clearly lying that he remembered it. And I was like, yeah, man, you know, you knocked me out in the finals. I should have been upset, but it was like the best day of my life. And he said something along the lines of, like, you know, I had to knock you out because if you had won, you know, I probably would have had to retire or something like that. So he had a good time with it, but it was crazy because I didn't, you know, there was a couple hundred kids at that camp. So just making the finals was awesome. But to be able to lose to him was a shining moment for sure.
So was he the inspiration for your dog's name?
He was, yeah. So I have a 10-year-old St. Bernard named Larry after the legend. And then when I got this St. Bernard, we were tossing around names and I was getting shot down left and right, but I was able to sneak in Walter in there because my girlfriend had no idea. Like,
yeah, that was one you could just slide right in there. Yeah, you wouldn't know the difference.
Kind of like the old man name and stuff like that. So once it was established, I pulled her up and I showed her sort of where his name came from, and I don't think she was too happy about it, but she learned to love it, so that's all you can say.
Well, it's definitely a good omen for a great dog, especially with names like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's the best, so it worked out.
So let's move on to your writing process in general. If you can remember back to it, what was really the first time you remember yourself writing about sports?
Man, it's really not even that far, you know, long ago, because, you know, I never went to school to be a writer. I didn't go to journalism school. I never envisioned myself writing about the Celtics or the NBA or anything like that. You know, there are just very few things on this planet that I care about more than, you know, than the Celtics. And, you know, I've lost girlfriends over it. You know, when we go on a first date, we're going to the Garden, because you need to understand that, like, this is going to dominate your life pretty much until I die. You know, that's we're a package deal.
Yeah.
And I want to say it was like, let's see, how long has it been? It's been about 2.5 years or something like that. You know, I was in between normal 9-to-5 jobs, and I was, you know, someone who read Barstool absolutely every single day, like, you know, like anybody else. And it was right around the time that the Celtics had traded for Isaiah. They were making this playoff push, and, you know, there really wasn't consistent Celtics coverage on the site. So I just remember, you know, in between looking for jobs, I had just made my own website just to like kill time during the day. I didn't know what I wanted to be. I didn't make it with an intention of, like, you know, trying to send it into Barstool to start to write for them. I just kind of wrote the same style you see now, probably a little bit better now, but, you know, the same, anything that came to my mind, I put up there, and I didn't think anyone was reading it. It wasn't really about that. It was more just, you know, to kill time. And I remember I was watching a Celtic game, and Prez had tweeted something about Isaiah, and I tweeted back at him, like, oh, funny you should mention that. Like, I just said something about that. And I sent him the link to the blog, and, you know, he followed me for, like, 5 seconds, which was crazy. Wow. If you're just, like, a normal stoolie, like, that's a crazy, you know, thing to have happen. This guy gets hundreds and hundreds of thousands of, you know, tweets a second. So he followed me for 5 seconds and was like, you know, this is pretty good. Like, you know, send me some more stuff if you have it. Then he unfollowed me.
The letdown.
So I sent him all the different types of stuff I had, because I had, you know, game previews, post game, funny stuff that was terrible. Literally just gave him everything I had. He emailed me back. It was like, all right, you know, this is pretty good. You know, if you're interested, I'd be willing to, you know, give you a shot and see where it goes. And, you know, we made a login that night, and I've kind of, you know, haven't looked back. They haven't taken it away from me since. So it's been awesome. It's been more than I could imagine it would be as someone who read the site, you know, every day. But what's interesting about it, and what I would imagine is different from other sites or, you know, other outlets, is I don't really have an editor, you know what I mean? I don't have someone who filters what I say or, you know, gives me a direction or anything like that. It's truly, you know, when I'm writing these blogs, you know, it's 1:30 in the morning after the Celtics just pissed me off, and I'm going to give it truly what I feel in the moment, because I'm confident there are other stoolies that read the site that care about this team in, you know, almost the exact same way. They just aren't talking about it on a website. So for me, it's just been something that it doesn't even seem like work, even though, you know, I have a normal 9-to-5 job. But, you know, it's awesome, and I'm just super appreciative that people enjoy it and that they read it and, you know, all that good stuff.
If you could look back at anything you've written in your time there, what's one piece in particular that meant a lot to you, or you feel like people particularly love that you did?
Well, I don't know if anybody truly loves what I do. But I would say for me, probably the most emotional and sort of blogs that I knew as I was writing them, I really, really needed to really crush, were probably number one was the Pierce retirement tribute blog. And the second one was probably the KG retirement tribute blog. I would say the Pierce was probably most important, just because for me, I mean, he was my generation's Larry Bird. I mean, he was everything that he was really the only thing we had for like 90% of his time in Boston. His teams were terrible. So for me, that was good, just because it was, you know, very emotional for me to have to say goodbye to him. I don't know if I've truly gotten over it yet, even though it's been like a year and a half or so. But I think some of my favorite blogs during the year, probably anything Isaiah related. I feel like I'm like the captain of the Isaiah team. So
you guard
anytime,
the gate.
You know, when he had 53, just any time that I could, like, you know, give a good middle finger to all the, you know, Isaiah haters out there, I sort of, you know, maybe go overboard here and there, but those are always fun to write just because he had such an incredible season. You know, it was truly an honor to be able to experience that, but then share it with all the Stewies.
One of the great seasons in Celtics history, and it's going to probably take us a year or two or maybe three or even more than that to recognize just how legendary this year was from him. Where would you put that in your years watching the Celtics, kind of in like the shock and awe and amazement category, just like on that leaderboard of things that just blew your mind watching the Celtics? Where would you put this Isaiah Thomas season?
I mean, it has to be really, really, really high. If only because when you look at what he was able to accomplish, you know, you could approach it as, you know, take a look at any Celtic legend and they didn't accomplish it, right? So his consecutive 20-point scoring streak, things like that, you know, his playoff, you know, 53-point performance is up there with like Larry Bird and Havlicek and shit like that. So it's stuff that you really have to look back and say, you know what? They didn't win the title. He may only be 5'9". I don't really care about that. But at the end of the day, he had a truly historic franchise, you know, season for the franchise that we may not see again unless he does it again, because it hadn't been done since Bird or Havlicek or anything like that. So I don't know if it got the respect it deserved while it was happening, but it wouldn't shock me if, you know, 3, 4, or 5 years from now, whenever he's done with the Celtics, or, you know, if he gets traded or retires with them, I think we'll look back and say, you know, Ainge was right when they signed him. He told him the way he plays, he could be a Celtics legend, and he's putting his name throughout the record books everywhere you look. So it's crazy to think, but, you know, when you saw him develop over the last 2 years, it's not a complete surprise because the guy does put in the work.
It's been amazing from start to finish. Forget all the stuff he did while he was here. The way they got him just in that flurry of trades, that trade deadline, I feel like 5 trades happened at once in the final second, and out of nowhere, Isaiah was on the Celtics. It's just been mind-blowing from day one, and it probably will continue to be. I don't think he's going to go anywhere this summer. We'll see. You never know with this team.
Hope not.
hope not, absolutely. And like you said, just, you got to appreciate greatness in the moment. I feel like we were talking about his defense, his trade value, more than what the greatness that was actually happening right in front of us. And especially once his sister died and the performances he was putting out after that, the jaw incident, like, it just became the stuff of legends beyond, like, the numbers and the impact he was having in the regular season, just the storyline as it developed. And it was too bad in the end he kind of got knocked out with the hip injury and there wasn't a beautiful, like, bow on top of what his season was, but it's still something to marvel at in the league's history in general, not just Celtics history.
Right.
So turn it back to Barstool. One thing I think about when I'm writing about the Celtics and just putting out content in general is kind of how this can stick out in a field of so many Celtics writers, so many Celtics dedicated sites. I'm sure you think about that yourself, at least from time to time. You know, you have the Greeny Bag, which I think is really cool. You're able to get out there and interact with the people, see what they have to say, and converse with them in that way. But beyond that, and maybe just talking about that a little bit too, How do you kind of try to put your Celtics stuff, and you talked about this a little bit with the freedom you have over at Barstool, how do you kind of make your content unique?
Yeah, so I think a lot of that just has to do with the site we write for, right? So I can write in just the same way that you and I are talking right now, I can talk that way on the blog. So if I want to, you know, if I want to make some crazy joke or analogy or just spend,
drop an F-bomb.
Yeah, drop like 5 F-bombs in a row. Like, you know, it's very honest. And I think, you know, there are guys that also, you know, everybody at CSNL or whatever, and at The Globe and Mass Live, like, those are all guys that I read every day and I truly respect what they do. And, you know, they certainly make my job a hell of a lot easier because, you know, they have that access to you know, get the information that, you know, we run with. But I think what the main difference is, you know, they're very controlled in their language and their approach, where on Barstool, it's kind of like the Wild Wild West, where, you know, I think our appeal is just, you know, buddies talking or getting into an argument or a debate or anything like that. And we can incorporate different media into our blogs that are a little bit different than, you know, your traditional Globe or anything like that. So for me, I just always try to say to myself, you know, when I first started, everyone's like, oh, just try to find your voice, try to find your voice. But I had never written before, and to me, that didn't even mean anything. Like, what does that mean, find my voice? So I just always, yeah, like, I don't know what that means. Like, how do you find your voice? All I'm doing is just talking how I talk to my friends or to my brother or whoever. So I think I always just try to remind myself to just be honest. Like, you know, if Isaiah has a bad game, I'm going to talk about how he has a bad game. If Horford does great, I'm going to, you know, give the big middle finger to all of his haters out there. So for me, it's just always just trying to be honest and just write what I feel in the moment. It may, you know, I may wake up and read it the next day and be like, damn, what the hell are we even talking about? This isn't even a coherent sentence. Like, it's filled with typos. There's exclamation points all over the place. But I think that resonates with readers. It's what sparked such good contribution for the Greeny Bag every Saturday. So that's just all I try to do is I just try to be honest, write what I feel as Homer as it can be, as outrageous as it might be at times. But I usually try to find some real basketball evidence to support my claims. But, you know, I just think it's one of those things where you don't know what you're going to do until you just, like, the hardest part for me every time is when I'm starting the blog and there's nothing on the page. You know, that's still something that I struggle with. I'll probably sit there for, you know, 15, 20 minutes just thinking about my first sentence or the headline to the blog. I mean,
like SpongeBob with the essay.
Yeah, you know, like once I get going, it's no problem. You know, it takes me, you know, 2 hours or whatever it is. You know, I could write forever, but, you know, I'm still at the point where how I start these blogs is usually the part that I spend the most time on. And then once I get going, I mean, it's just, I can't stop, so.
So there's definitely an emphasis with you, I see, about conversing with the people, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's with the mailbag. That can go many different ways. It can be good, it can be bad, and it can be really good and bad in both opposite directions. How important? Why is it so important for you personally to go out there and talk to people about the team and pull people in for your mailbag and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so it was a two-thought approach when I started it last August. So the main reason I wanted to do it was because, you know, the best part of writing for Barstool and watching on Twitter with, you know, other Celtic fans, that's by far, you know, talking to the Stoolies is really why I enjoy it. So I'm looking, you know, the site's all about creating franchises and creating content and trying to find, you know, where you stand out. So, you know, I had noticed that, you know, Saturday is a really dead day, you know, back then. I mean, now there's Stool Scenes, there's other stuff going on. But at the time, there really wasn't any weekend blogging going on. So, you know, this is the beauty of Barstool, where we have the complete freedom to just try something. And then if nobody tells you to stop, just keep on going. So I said to myself, you know, how can I turn my Twitter interactions into a blog that, and then when can I post that blog that will help fill time and help, you know, get interaction on the site? So obviously a mailbag was an easy choice. So having it every Saturday, I think, you know, gives, and having it be year round gives the Celtics a presence on the site, even when the Celtics aren't playing, that I think is important because there are people who care about the team all year round. And I have a pretty simple policy. You know, if you write in, I'm probably going to use it because I appreciate the people who contribute to the bag so much and who read the blog so much. You know, no take is too outrageous for me, you know, for that Greeny Bag. You know, the crazier, the better. If I think you've come up with a, like just this last week, some guy was talking about trading Isaiah. And if I think you're dumb, I'm going to tell you you're dumb. But thank you for writing in. So it's just one of those things where, you know, it's all about the Stoolies. And as they, contribute. The mailbag is just going to get better and better. So, you know, now we're dealing with a lot of, you know, draft talk and lineup questions and things, free agency. But it's been really interesting because when I started it last summer, I didn't know how it was going to go. I was like, am I going to have to just make up emails and just pretend that people are actually writing in? You know, we've been fortunate that, you know, it's been a constant on the site for long enough that, you know, I throw up like a mid-week reminder for submissions and people contribute. And I couldn't be more thankful.
That's awesome. And I think that's one of the cool things blogs have been able to do is create that sense of community in the writing realm. As we've seen, traditional media doesn't always do that. And it still seems, you know, as far as blogs have come, as far as internet media has come, it still feels like there's tension between that side of things and, you know, the traditional journalism side a lot of the time. From both ends, just a lot of tension. Me and my friend talk about it all the time. We're in journalism school right now. We're just talking about, you know, the great things both sides bring to the table and how it seems like they're fighting more of the time than they are trying to, like, pull from each other and improve each other. Don't you think there should be, if not more cooperation between those two sides, at least some more peacefulness and solidarity?
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly hope so. I mean, I haven't felt... personally, just through my own experience in dealing, you know, with the Celtics, I haven't felt any animosity.
I think it's different with the Celtics in general. I mean, I'm kind of referring to that whole, you know, Jared Karabas, Peter Abraham type feud on that end. I think the Celtics in general have been open to that kind of conversion between both.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not so much in other parts of the sporting world.
Yeah, and I think with that, you know, Karabas is such a dominator. You know, he's actually making, you know, big time waves that I think, you know, some of the newspaper guys maybe, you know, are getting a little nervous in regards to that. For me, I'm like, I'm not even in the stratosphere as some of these guys. So
yeah.
I don't really know that they see me as a threat to what they do, but I certainly hope that they wouldn't ever view me or Barstool in that light, just because, you know, I've been on, you know, the Locked On Celtics podcast with Jay King and all that stuff. And, you know, they're great guys, and I think there's a place for both of us, right? Like, I think what I do is different from what they do, but there's still an audience for both of us. Like, I think you can enjoy both approaches if you're just a fan of this team, right? Like, if you want to learn about what it's like in, you know, the locker room and things like that, you go to them. If you want to hear some, you know, masshole just curse his brains out at, you know, a Kelly Olynyk pump fake, you can come to me and I can, you know, give you that, you know.
Provide, yep.
So it's been, I don't know. I just think that, you know, people tend to, you know, pick on Barstool for this and that and all that stuff. But it, from the sports content side of it, I think we have really, really strong writers, you know, from, you know, hockey with Rear Admiral and Chief in Chicago and 610 in New York, and then baseball with Karabas, myself and Clem for basketball, and then there's mixtape. So I think as Barstool grows and becomes a more of a major player in the media space, that people will start to look at us, you know, as a more respected media outlet. But I never have any aspirations to be, you know, a Big J journalist or anything like that. I'm happy on the pirate ship. This is, for me, it's a perfect outlet. So, you know, if people like it, great. If they want to beef with us, you know, so be it.
Yeah. So last thing I got for you on your side of things is, honestly, where you're going from here. I know you have a job outside of your writing gig. How do you kind of balance those two things? And do you eventually hope to eventually go toward writing full time?
Yeah, that's pretty much how I get by. And it's tough when, you know, especially during trade deadline season or free agency, when things happen in the middle of the day and I'm at work, I got to try to find a way to get a blog up, and it's a challenge. And, you know, it's something that I think I've gotten pretty good at, of finding a balance. But, you know, obviously the goal is to have a full-time, you know, presence on the stool. And, you know, my dream would be to have like a Barstool basketball section similar to what they have with baseball. And,
yeah,
you know, Dave and I, we talk about it, and things are moving, and then you don't hear for a couple months, and then you get a random email. So for now, it's just, you know, I consider myself, you know, lucky to be able to write for the site in the capacity that I do. So for me, it's just about making sure I grind the way I do, put out the type of content that I think the stoolies will enjoy, be consistent with it, have fun with it. And, you know, I never expected to write for them in the first place. So I'm not expecting anything to come from what I'm doing now. And my hope is just that the powers that be see the work that I'm doing and that they like it. And I can, you know, stop being a quote unquote cube monkey and kind of live the dream.
Yeah. Love that phrase, the powers that be. So we're going to let's talk some Celtics. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to come back and have a good old Celtics conversation now that we got to know Dan Greenberg a little bit. I'm Bobby Manning. We'll see you on the other side.
It's getting there. The summer's still rolling along. I'm enjoying myself, doing whatever I can to produce, have fun, get time with my friends, with my family this summer. But eventually, we're going to have to look at going back to school, out to Syracuse again, probably the end of August. And when that comes, my biggest dread, as much as I love it out there, is the food. That's right. Love coming home, if nothing more than for a fresh home-cooked meal. One of my favorite restaurants around home. So when I go back to school, it's going to be tough. The meal plans just don't cut it. So what I'll be turning to, and what you should think about too, is Blue Apron. Blue Apron has the freshest ingredients. And more important than that is that they are going to custom make your order. If you love fish, you can bulk up on the fish. If you love vegetables, if you're a vegetarian, vegan, I know that's the wave right now. They can tailor-make meals to fit your needs. They have special delivery options to fulfill exactly what you need on a week-to-week basis. And I think what a lot of people worry about when it comes to these delivery services is variety. Especially with meal plans at school, you end up eating the same stuff every single week. But Blue Apron, 52 weeks in a year, they guarantee pretty much that you will never have a repeat meal. So Blue Apron is a service I really want you to try out. I'm going to be doing it this fall. And what I would say is that you go over to blueapron.com/bobcast. And if you want to see what this service is all about, try it out for yourself. They're going to offer you your first three meals free through CLNS Media and the Bobcast. That's blueapron.com/bobcast. Sign up and get your first three meals free. Let me know how it goes. If you love it, then give me a shout. That's Blue Apron. This is the Bobcast. Back to the show.
All right, back. Dan Greenberg, Greeny, Barstool Sports, Bobby Manning here. We are going to roll along because this is a crucial offseason, Greeny. I feel like we say it every year, but it feels like it's even more critical every single year that goes by, especially with the aspirations that the Celtics have. So, you know, we're kind of entrenched in this battle as people who follow the team. You know, some want them to go all in right now, trade these chips they have, build the best team possible, get them top heavy, you know, get your Paul George, get your Jimmy Butler, and just trade away the future. Some people think they're going to play the long game and, you know, just fall on the team on a day-to-day basis. It feels like that's kind of the route they're taking, even though they're going to try to be the best they can every single year. It looks like they're kind of gearing up their efforts toward those draft picks they got being their core. And, you know, we don't know what they're going to do this summer, but say they're going to play the long game. I don't know how you feel about that. But if they're going to play the long game right now and push for Markelle Fultz, Jaylen Brown, those kind of guys to be their future, where does that leave Al Horford and Isaiah Thomas and the whole conversation around the team? Because they're in their prime right now.
I mean, maybe I'm naive with it, but I'm of the thinking that you can do both. You can build for the future and you can stay competitive in the short term. So if they're going to keep Markelle Fultz, you know, obviously you're going to have a lot of tough decisions to make with, you know, Avery and Rozier and Isaiah and Marcus. If it were me, I would say the hardest decision comes down to, you know, obviously you feel any offers you can for Rozier. I think he had a good postseason, so you maybe, you know, throw him in a package and see what you can get. It would suck, but at the same time, it's just, you know, process of an elimination. So for me, it comes down to Avery versus Marcus, and I probably change my mind on this every single day just because you have to think of it like, you know, Avery might be the better player, but he's also 4 years older. you're probably going to have to pay him closer to max money than you will with, you know, Marcus. I don't foresee anybody giving Marcus a max deal in restricted free agency. So you kind of maybe just have to go with Marcus just because of the age and the years that you can control him, I think, is probably the deciding factor. When it comes to Isaiah, the biggest thing I can't stand is they say, oh, we're drafting Markelle Fultz. We got a plan for the future. These next 5 years don't matter, so trade Isaiah. And I say, if the next 5 years don't matter, why wouldn't you just keep Isaiah for those 5 years, experience competitive basketball, have Markelle Fultz play in Eastern Conference Finals, shit like that, yeah, and then get him that valuable experience. You know, either move on from him or you trade him, whatever, and you have Fultz, who has been part of a winning culture, who's been in competitive games. I think that's, even if he's only playing, you know, 15, 20, 25 minutes a night, I don't necessarily think that's a terrible thing. I mean, the kid's only, he's only, you know, 19 years old, whatever it may be. So I don't think there has to be any sort of rush to give him 35, 40 minutes a night. So let him learn with Isaiah. Let him come off the bench or, you know, play, you know, 20, 25 minutes a night and see where it takes you.
Everyone seems to think the sky's falling with the NBA because of these playoffs, because of the dominance of the Warriors, the Cavaliers on both sides. There's kind of a back and forth about the cap considerations with both teams, whether they're going to be able to keep these things together. Do you see their reign over the NBA coming to an end sooner rather than later? Do you really think that, like everyone else seems to think, this is going to be a nightmare for 3 years where it's just these teams going at it every single year?
I think Cleveland has a chance of falling off a little bit quicker. Golden State, we're all screwed. I mean, I'm convinced, you know, they're all going to take less money to stay together. They're all like in, you know, their mid to late 20s. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be really hard for teams to get past them for the next, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, just because why would you want to leave? You know, I see now every now and then, you know, Klay Thompson's going to want to leave to be on his own team. I don't understand why. You know, his production did not change pre-Kevin Durant to post-Kevin Durant. They're winning a bajillion games in a row. They're going to go through the playoffs probably undefeated. I can't imagine, you know, you would want to leave from that situation. So I think we're all in a tough spot, you know, barring injuries, obviously. But, you know, you got to credit Golden State. They drafted well. They moved cap around to be able to sign Durant. And that's what every NBA fan wants their own team to do what Golden State just did. So While it's tough because, you know, they're going to dominate for the foreseeable future, you almost have to respect it.
Yeah, and it seems like the Celtics are almost trying to follow in their footsteps a little bit. If you remember not too long ago, the Celtics were the Warriors were kind of in the middle of the pack out west, and they just kept creeping and creeping. A couple of good free agent signings. I'd almost compare the Andre Iguodala signing they made to the Al Horford signing the Celtics made. You know, not the flashiest stat stuffer in the world, but just makes all the right plays, great veteran to have in the room. It feels with every move they make, with every year they improve, they're just kind of following in those footsteps a little bit. They don't quite have their Steph Curry yet. Maybe they never will, but who knows? Markelle Fultz, maybe that's the guy. So the West is doomed, like you say. It feels like even if the Warriors just have Curry and Durant alone, never mind Green and Thompson, that's just a world beater in itself, those two. I mean, Evan Turner was on Twitter talking about them maybe being the two best players who have ever played together. Do you think their dominance over the West is going to influence the Gordon Hayward decision at all that we all kind of have our eyes on when it comes to him returning to Utah or heading out east to Boston?
I don't know. I don't know if it's really that true that, like, oh, people are going to come to the East just to get away from the Warriors. I think, you know, Utah is kind of like the Celtics of the West, whereas they have good young talent, a good young coach. They won 52 games or 51 games. And they had a lot of injuries this year, too. So it's not exactly like, you know, if you're thinking 3, 4, 5 years out, it's a interesting debate as to where can Utah make any progress in closing the gap to to Golden State that we would be able to do for Cleveland. And I'm not so sure that's possible. So I don't buy this whole, you know, Hayward's a sure thing for the Celtics. I actually don't even think they're a favorite to get him just because, you know, he's not in a terrible situation. He doesn't have a bad coach. So I think the Brad Stevens connection will help. And obviously, you know, the East isn't as deep in terms of, you know, the caliber of talent when you get through seeds, you know, 4 through 9 or anything like that. But I don't foresee it because you still have to get past LeBron. And no one's been able to do that for 8 years. So I'm not sure it's any easier. I'd like to think it would be, but I'm not, you know, just because they got Horford, I'm not ready to accept that they're just all of a sudden always going to get a free agent.
So we talked so much about Hayward in the Celtics sphere. It's almost like there's a black hole after he resigns in Utah. Like, what are they going to do with that 30 million or so cap space they have? Do you go down to the next free agent? Is it Blake Griffin? Is it Paul Millsap? The free agent class really stinks, and it's a shame this is the year that the Celtics are going to be in that position to get a max contract. So I don't know. Do they sign one of those other bigger free agents out there? Do they do like an Amir Johnson type deal with a guy, a 1-1? Do they try to make a trade? What's the number two backup plan behind Gordon Hayward?
They're in a tough spot because they have to spend the money this year. If they don't, you're going to be in a really tough spot with everybody that you have to now re-sign next year. It's tough. I would imagine, you know, you said the free agent class isn't that good this year. It doesn't get that much better the next 2 years either. So all of a sudden, everyone's saying, oh, we have all this cap space. We need to save it for player X. But when you look at who's out there, the people that would legit leave teams, none of them are bringing you over Golden State. None of them are bringing you over Cleveland by themselves. So it wouldn't shock me to see them do a Tyler Zeller or a Amir Johnson type 1-1 deal where, you know, maybe you give J.J. Redick $20 million for 1 year with a team option in the second year. But if they can't find anybody that's like that Hayward, I can't see Ainge giving away, you know, 5 years to Blake Griffin or anything like that. But it's tough because if they don't get him, I don't know what they do because there's nobody out there that fits this system that you could say – this guy, I mean, Blake Griffin, maybe, but he has the health issues. So, it's kind of like Horford, where you got to put all your chips into that basket and just hope it works out.
Man, it feels like there's concerns up and down that free agent board, and it really isn't a deep free agent board. I mean, you got Griffin at that number two slot, injury concerns, like you said. I'm not even sure how well he'd fit in the Celtics scheme of things with his lack of a three-point shot. And then you got Paul Millsap, and as good as he is, The big topic there is that, you know, you're the Hawks then. It's Horford and Millsap, and that's a bad matchup for Cleveland itself if you're trying to gear up to beat them. So it's a tough, tough offseason. And, you know, one of the less tough things to deal with is going to be seeing some of these guys shed off the team. And, you know, your Jonas Jerepkos, your Tyler Zellers, we're probably going to see those guys leave this summer. Probably not the toughest thing to see for the regular fan. These are guys down near the bottom of the roster. But for guys who have a deeper interest in the team like me and you, like these were some of the guys who helped build this whole thing they have going right now, especially Jerepko, Zeller. I mean, these guys have been here since day one of Stevens, it feels like. Out of all the guys, I say they lose all their free agents and they sign Hayward. Out of all the guys who are potentially going to be leaving, who do you think you're going to miss the most just from, like, the sanctimony of it?
Oh, without a doubt, it's James Young. It's without a doubt.
Sneaky pick.
I'm going to die on this hill. I am team-free James Young until I die. I hope somebody else gets him and actually gives him a chance because I felt like he never got a shot here. And you know, between the Rondo trade, bringing in Jay Crowder, and then you had, you know, drafting Jaylen Brown. You know, he's only 21 years old. He shot 40% from three. Wow. Give him a chance, is all I say.
You're still on the James Young hill.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You never forget your first love, so.
I feel like he's going to be 25 years old, and we're going to be like, it's still only 25. Yeah, he's still pretty young.
You know what? It'll be true.
I'm on Kelly. You know, I'm not the biggest Kelly Olynyk guy. In fact, I criticize him all the time. He's probably going to sneak away for more money. I actually just wrote like a little goodbye ahead of time for over at Celtics blog about his probable departure. And I feel like he's the kind of guy that we took for granted here. Like he had his frustrating moments, but he was really good as far as a bench player goes. Like among all the bench players in the NBA, he was kind of a luxury off the bench, I felt like.
Yeah, and you know, and what I liked about him is he was like all of us embodied in NBA player, right? Like
yeah.
A tall, goofy white guy who isn't very coordinated, but he can sure as hell hit a three. He's not going to rebound. He's not going to play, you know, standout defense. But, you know, his problem was just consistency. And that's why I think Celtic fans really, you know, got frustrated with him because, you know, he would have great stretches and then he would be invisible for stretches.
It was the Jeff Green factor.
Yeah. And that's what it really was. It was really like Jeff Green. And I think, you know, he's going to get, you know, 13, 14, 15 million a year. And I just can't see Ainge wanting to pay that when, you know, he's not a crucial part. But at the same time, he's going to have to, you know, almost, 80% of his bench is probably not going to be re-signed. So they're going to have to find that spacing, that shooting, that offense from somewhere. I don't know if they have it right now, so...
Yeah, so a lot of the bottom of the roster is going to be heading out, and if they're not signing free agents to fill that gap, it's probably going to be Yabusele, Zizek, maybe Abdel Nader. How good are you feeling about some of these draft picks that are carrying over from last year that might be the entirety of the Celtics bench if things go that way?
Yeah, I mean, I'm all in on Yabu. I need Yabu in my life real, real, real bad. I think he's going to be... I don't know if he'll quite be, you know, the French Draymond Green, but everything that I saw, you know, at 2 a.m. watching YouTube videos tells me that he's going to make an absolute impact. For Zizic, I feel like he's going to be your starting center. You know, I think he'll fill the...
Right from day one?
Yeah, day one, I think he comes in. I think he's your starting center. He's a tough, tough kid. He's playing in a league that produced, you know, Jokic and things like that. And he's having the same type of impact over there that they did. So, well, you never know how, you know, a guy from Serbia or wherever the hell that is will turn out. I think, you know, you can't teach size. The rebounding can't get any worse than it was this year. And, you know, Amir Johnson couldn't jump. This kid looks like he can actually jump. So I'm excited for them. But it's tough when you think of, you know, their transition from Europe into the NBA is going to be really, really hard. So to have to rely on them to be your only options coming off the bench or, you know, your starting center, you got to hope that they get Hayward because they're going to need offense from somewhere.
Yeah, that center spot's actually an interesting debate. I kind of started bringing that up on Twitter and over at the blog I'm writing about a little bit. Is Johnson, you know, it's not a monumental gap he's leaving as he probably heads back to Toronto. But there is a gap there, and I don't know if Zizek's going to be ready to fill that hole day one. In fact, Jeff Clark over at our site wrote about that too. That's a lot of pressure to put on a first-year NBA player. Year one is going into that starting role at center. I think they might need to find a guy to fill that gap in their rotation, and you know it doesn't have to be a marquee guy. The guy I'm kind of riding the wave on is Kyle O'Quinn with the Knicks. I feel like he got buried in all the cess there. I feel like the Magic didn't give him a fair shot when he first got in the league, and his per 36 stats, 14 points a game, 13 rebounds a game, 3 blocks a game, like that's the kind of guy they need. I'm actually buying in a lot on this concept that if you can pull those guys with potential from other teams, the sort of Brad Stevens effect might take over with some of these guys, and they might be able to have some of their best years here in Green, and they might be able to get one of those lower-level guys with another team for cheap and kind of boost their value here.
Yeah, and you know, to your Quinn point, you know, he's what, like 27, something like that?
I think he's 25, 26.
Yeah, he doesn't make a lot of money. He makes probably like, what, like $4 million, $5 million a year?
Yeah.
So he's got, I think he just signed a deal like last year, the year before that. So you're probably trading for a guy that has a couple years left on his deal before, you know, free agency. The problem is, you know, what on earth is Phil Jackson going to ask you for him that would be worth it? for the Celtics to do. Like, if you're telling me
I'm hoping
you get Kyle Quinn for, like, you know, the Clippers pick and a second round pick, like, yeah, absolutely, let's do it. But the why I think Zizic can start for you is, remember how they used Amir Johnson, right? So you're going to play Zizic, you know, 15 to 20 minutes at the most, but then a large part of your rotations are going to have Horford at the five. You got Smart coming in. So it's not like they're going to need this kid for 30, 35 minutes a night, but you can get him in there so that Horford can start at the four. You know, you have size at the center position. You have athleticism. So I do think he can start, but if you can get a buy low sort of candidate like a Quinn for a cheap price, you know, I could be all right with that too.
So the draft's coming up. That's sort of the big day on our calendar as Celtics people coming up. That's like all we're looking forward to at this point. And it kind of feels like the Celtics are just trying to drum up this conversation as if there is one. I read today in the mock draft, Chad Ford, that they're considering Fultz, but they're also considering Ball, Jackson, Fox. I feel like it's a load of crap. I think it's Fultz all the way. I mean, you saw the photo shoot today of him in the garden. It was like they were raising the murals for him, trying to get everyone pumped up with how exposed they had him today. Do you think there's any doubt in the Celtics' mind about that number one pick, if they're going to use it, that it's Fultz?
No, but, you know, I think that's just, you just have to play the game. And
yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me, though, if they can somehow convince the Lakers that, you know, either they're going to take Ball or somebody is giving them a god offer to trade up for number one to get Ball. So then you can trade down a pick, maybe get an asset, and then still end up with Fultz. I think that would be a strong play. But if that's not a possibility, just take the kid and, you know, you take the best player in the draft, regardless of position, and you figure it out later. You know, that's clearly what he is. You know, you don't want to pass up on that potential. You know, Ball could be good, but I don't know. I'm more of a Fultz guy myself, so I think Ainge is going to take him. But you have to play the game because you don't want to show your hand, you know, 2 weeks before the draft.
Yeah, and I feel like the Lakers are kind of playing a little game back, you know, just saying they're not sure if they're going to get Ball themselves. It's all a game up at the top of the draft. I mean, the Celtics had to play it last year with the whole trade discussion at number three there. So if they're going to go with Fultz, which it seems like they are, I think they'd be crazy not to with how much potential this guy has. You seem to think, at least from what you said earlier in the show, that they're going to need to move two guards out of here. Do you think that's necessarily true? I mean, how many guys do you think you have to move out to leave Fultz with enough room to grow, to get minutes, to play, to make mistakes, and just have room? I mean, kind of not get stuck in that Jaylen Brown territory. Well, Jaylen Brown definitely got a lot of opportunity for a rookie with this kind of team, but I think you also can consider that he definitely didn't get as much room as a regular rookie of his stature would get.
Yeah, I think the number is two. I think, you know, from a minute standpoint and from a contract standpoint, because they're going to have to pay big money to, you know, Smart, or you just can't keep anybody just for the sake of your tax bill and your cap space. So that, you know, Fultz is going to come in making $7 million a year, which is going to be, you know, aside from Avery, who's at $8 million, no other guard makes that money. You know, Isaiah's only at $6 million. So you won't necessarily have to do anything for this first season, but heading into next year, you know, you have to make decisions one way or another because you can't pay anybody. And the hope is that rookie year, Fultz shows you that he can play and he is for real. And then at that point, you want to maximize his talent and use some of your other guys to bring in pieces to fill needs, whether it's a stretch four, whether it's a big man, whatever it might be.
Well, that's Greeny's take on it. And he's going to be covering it all summer long over at Barstool Sports and on Twitter, of course. Tweets all day long at Stool Greeny. It was a blast to have you aboard, Dan. Thanks for telling us your story, giving us some of your Celtics takes. Hopefully we'll hear from you again soon on the Bobcast.
Yeah, man, anytime. Just let me know. It was fun.
Thanks for listening today. Had a blast talking with Greeny and everybody else. As a bonus for you, you're going to get yourself some free bets over at MyBookie. MyBookie is offering you 50% of what you put down. Just use the promo code Bobcast. That's mybookie.ag. Thanks for listening today. We'll be back before long with another story of aspiration to accomplishment. I'm Bobby Manning. Thanks for listening as always. Can you believe it? That is 1 year of Bobcasts as of today. A year ago, we started off with Adam Kaufman, and we've been lucky enough to have a bunch of brilliant guests, Greeny included, today. And we've been lucky to have all of you listening, whether it's my friends, my family, all you people out on Twitter, anybody else. Even if you're just listening this one time, I really thank you. This has been a dream come true. It's something I've wanted to do for a long time, and we're finally doing it. That's what it's all about, huh? That's our show for today. Find the next one, past shows, The Bobcast, the weekly tour of sports and pop culture on iTunes, at The Bobcast Show on Twitter, or just follow me on Twitter, at Real Bob Manning. And, of course, CLNS Media. Shout out to them, at CLNS Media on Twitter. We'll be back next week with another edition of The Bobcast. I'm Bobby Manning. Thanks so much again. See you soon. Peace.
That's where I got it from, Dave.
Bobcast.